Welcome to Everyday Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, nurse practitioner Cynthia Thurlow. This podcast is designed to educate, empower, and inspire you to achieve your health and wellness goals. My goal and intent is to provide you with the best content and conversations from leaders in the health and wellness industry each week and impact over a million lives. Today, I connected with Dr. Nick Bitz. He's a naturopathic physician that specializes in Ayurvedic medicine. He is a leading voice in the natural products industry and currently serves as Senior Vice President of Product Development at Neurohacker Collective. His areas of expertise include nootropics, anti-aging medicine, biohacking, herbology, nutrition, and dietary supplements. Today, we spoke at length about cellular senescence, zombie cells and differences with autophagy, some of the hallmarks of aging, the role of the gut microbiome and the importance of acromantia, the impact of senomorphics and senolytics, brain aging, lifestyle, and last but not least, sarcopenia and anabolic resistance. I know you will enjoy this conversation as much as I did recording it. Welcome, Nick. I've been looking forward to our conversation. I'm glad we can make it happen.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited about this conversation.
Yeah. So my community is familiarized with the concept of autophagy, maybe not as familiarized with the concept of cellular senescence, although very important, and differentiating that from speaking about zombie cells, understanding, you know, what's going on in the aging process. So let's start the conversation there, because I think that there's a lot of information that I think could be of benefit for people to understand about what's going on at a cellular level as we are actually getting older.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of relationships and overlap with autophagy and cellular senescence, but they are very distinct. The area of senescence is just this burgeoning field. It's just starting to emerge. Seems to be a lot of enthusiasm around this area of science right now, and rightfully so. I mean, it has enormous promise and potential. In a lot of ways, it really points to the future of healthy aging. And so I'm really excited about this topic in particular, and I'm excited about the tools that we can use to undercut this aging process and to really help the body just optimize over time. And so, yeah, if we step back, you know, cellular senescence is, in short, the end of the life cycle of a cell. And so we know that cells, you know, all 37 trillion cells in the body, they all have life cycles. You know, on average, they replicate about 50 times and then they stop replicating. Generally, then they move into this kind of dormant phase that's known as senescence. And pretty quickly, the body will get rid of those cells, most commonly through the process known as apoptosis, which is a very sciencey technical term. But apoptosis is just a Latin word that means falling off. And so these cells essentially self-destruct. They go through what's known as cellular suicide, and they kind of explode from the inside, and all of their parts are recycled to create new cells in the body. And so that's important. That's important for tissue regeneration and just staying young and youthful and optimal. And so what senescence is, why it's important to the aging process, is because this phase that these cells get locked into can become extended. So short-term senescence is fine. It's normal. You know, every time we work out, we create senescent cells. When we go out in the sun, we create senescent cells. If we have any kind of damage to the body, we create senescent cells. So it's normal. It's part of the body's repair and regeneration mechanism. But when these cells linger inside tissues, it becomes problematic. And that really is one of the drivers of the aging process. And when these cells, these non-functional zombie cells, as they're called, when they get lodged in tissues, it impacts the structure of the tissue, and it also impacts the function of the tissue. And even beyond that, we know that these cells secrete these inflammatory compounds that can impact the microenvironment within a specific tissue, but can also be moved systemically and create this chronic low-grade inflammation throughout the entire body. So senescence is absolutely fascinating. You know, again, it comes from a Latin word that means old man. It comes from the word senex. And so, you know, once we've understood that, we understood how that relates to these different aspects of aging. And one of them is autophagy, which you speak about quite often.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of individuals, you've done a beautiful job differentiating the process of cellular senescence, zombie cells. And I think for people that are listening, understanding that as we are getting older, this process in many ways doesn't work quite as efficiently. Is that correct? And therefore, we're at greater risk for these arrested development cells. That's kind of how I was thinking of them, as they're arrested in their evolution. And the hallmarks of aging are based off of this process of weakened, deconditioned cellular senescence. And so for the benefit of listeners, what are some of the bigger concept in terms of looking at hallmarks of aging? These are things that will probably not be a tremendous surprise to most individuals because they are at the basis for a lot of the changes that we see happening in our bodies or maybe in our loved ones. I'd make the argument that I think our generation is much more aware of a lot of these lifestyle related aspects that can impact how we navigate the aging process, because it's, I guess, the way that I look at aging. I'm not anti-aging because I think that that sends the wrong message. I think it's more about being informed about what's happening and doing, you know, helpful things that are going to make an enormous difference. I don't want to be the little old lady who falls and breaks her hip when she's 70. I want to make sure I'm physically active, making good food choices, getting plenty of sleep, reducing the likelihood of having these hallmarks of aging being a larger issue.
Yeah, the hallmarks of aging are fascinating. You know, this was an idea that was proposed in 2013, really just to encapsulate where all the science was heading. And so, you know, there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of theories about why we age. But the hallmarks of aging now, I think, creates the strongest foundation. And, you know, in 2013, there were 9 hallmarks of aging. And over the course of the last decade, we've added 3 more. So there are 12 known hallmarks of aging presently, one of which is disabled autophagy. I think over the last decade, we've learned a lot about autophagy and how any dysfunction in that area can impact the repair and regeneration processes and move cells into a senescent state. And so there are things you can do to support autophagy, make sure that your cells are repairing, getting rid of damaged parts as effectively as can be. But we do know how these aspects, these hallmarks, are all related. And so I like that because it gives us a framework to study these aspects of aging. It's no longer different, unrelated processes. They're all intertwined and they're all related to one another. There's actually an idea that if you can impact just one of the hallmarks, you can, in essence, undercut all 12 of the hallmarks. And so we're learning more about that. We're going to keep adding to all of these different hallmarks that we know of. But, you know, cellular senescence is one of those hallmarks. And, you know, if there's damage to a cell, it gets moved into that senescent state and it really drives the aging process overall.
How does our modern day lifestyle play into exacerbating these hallmarks of aging? You know, the average person is not metabolically healthy, is probably not physically active, probably not getting high quality sleep, or, you know, all these things that we know are not beneficial. But in your estimation, how is our modern day lifestyle impacting the aging process overall?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question. I look upon it as it's impacting all phases of being human. It starts at the cellular level. It's impacting the structure and function of cells. We're not feeding the mitochondria in the ways that we should to facilitate cellular energy. We're not giving the cells the proper food to repair itself through autophagy. You can also step in a more broad fashion and look at systems. We know that the gut microbiome, as an example, is one of the hallmarks. And any kind of shift there in the microbiome can have enormous repercussions throughout the entire body. So I think what we do on a daily basis informs what happens on a cellular level, but it also has repercussions throughout the entire body and systemically.
You know, it's interesting. I just interviewed Dr. Colleen Cutliffe. And so we were talking about the gut microbiome and how we were both laughing because we were at the same training at the same university, although we did not know one another. And she was saying there was no information about the gut microbiome at the time that you and I were studying at the same university. And yet now, probably since 2010, there's growing awareness. And so things like antibiotics, chronic stress, even jet lag from travel. And if you do a lot of travel like I do, I know that sometimes I feel like I'm upside down when I'm you know, coming back, returning from trips, but even understanding that changes in the gut microbiome impact our food choices, they impact our cravings, they impact our ability to, you know, fight a proper immune or create a proper immune response. And so on a lot of different levels, you appropriately identify that, you know, there's the cellular level all the way up to a systems approach. And it's not as if one doesn't influence the other.
Yeah, the gut microbiome is fascinating and it's unbelievable. Even when I was in medical school, we didn't know a lot about the gut microbiome. It wasn't a huge topic. You know, we talked about it very abstractly, you know, when in doubt, treat the gut, which is still, you know, naturopathic physicians talk about that all the time. Ayurvedic practitioners talk about that all the time. But now we're getting into the details and we're understanding the gut microbiome in much more detail and how that relates to not only gut health, but organ health. And so there's gut organ axis is all throughout the body. You know, first and foremost, the gut brain axis. We know that there's that bi-directional communication between the gut and the brain. And we're learning more about how gut health and microbiome health impacts mood, emotions, cognitive performance. And so that's happening throughout the body. It happens in the lungs, it happens in the heart, happens in the muscles. It's all interrelated and it all starts with the gut. So, you know, if there's one area that I would love to dedicate the rest of my life to, it probably would be the study of the gut microbiome because it's just absolutely fascinating. And there's so many things you can do. I mean, right now, when you get into the world of dietary supplements, which is the world that I live in presently, probiotics are the number one category and they're enormous. There's a lot of interest. You know, most people are either taking a probiotic or that they know that they should be taking a probiotic. And I think we've just scratched the surface in terms of what's possible from a dietary supplement standpoint. And to date, you know, when you look at what's available in the marketplace, I would say that most of the strains that are out there are really B grade or even C grade probiotics. And so this kind of next gen probiotic is starting to emerge in the marketplace and they're much more effective. People are going to feel the benefits much more than they feel their probiotic. So I'm really excited about this field. It's endlessly fascinating. And there's just new studies coming out every week to learn.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think strains like lactobacilli and Bifidobacter, I mean, they're easy to grow, you know, they're aerobic versus Akkermansia, which is more challenging, has to grow in an anaerobic environment without oxygen. And I have a family member who, it's just serendipitous the way sometimes things all come together, who started on an Akkermansia product, has been on antibiotics for 15 years to address Lyme appropriately. And as you can imagine, her gut is decimated because of that, but it's killed off the latent infection. And she said, this is the first thing that's helped her gut in 15 years. And so for me, I think it's incredibly gratifying to know that the science is advancing to a degree that it's not just taking the antibiotic, it's understanding that it can have tremendous therapeutic value. And so Akkermansia, I mean, to me, I find fascinating because it helps with, you know, if you don't have enough Akkermansia, you're going to end up with a leaky gut because it's part of this fortification of the small intestinal lining. It's involved in GLP-1s, endogenous GLP-1s. So for all the people listening that are familiarized with Wegovy and semaglutide, before any of those drugs are created, there's actual endogenous production of GLP-1 and Akkermansia is involved with that. So it helps with satiety and, you know, helps with, you know, insulin sensitivity. And then the other thing that I found really interesting about Akkermansia was just the fact that it's involved in butyrate production. So these short chain fatty acids and how, you know, these are things that are critically important to have available in the distal colon. And so much to your point, I can really now nerd out on the microbiome because I just understand that when you have a healthy microbiome, it just makes you a healthier individual overall. And so really being diligent about educating yourself about good quality options that are available, that nutrition piece is certainly really important. I think it goes without saying, most of us need to be eating more fruits and vegetables than we are. I enjoy protein. I'm very open about that, but I do diligently make sure I've got brightly pigmented fruits and vegetables in my diet because that helps feed exactly the microorganisms in the gut microbiome that utilize that as a fuel substrate.
You're exactly right. You know, I've actually moved from recommending a high fiber diet into a high polyphenol diet. So that idea of like eating a rainbow every day is critically important. It's really important that you're providing food for these little critters that are living in our gut. And these polyphenol flavonoid-like compounds have a prebiotic effect. So they help to feed specific strains of probiotics. So Akkermansia being one of them. And so it's important to make sure that you're getting your blues, your purples, your reds, your greens, the full spectrum on a daily basis. And I think that's a lot easier for people to do rather than looking at the amount of fiber that they're getting, because most people just aren't going to get enough fiber. The average American's consuming less than 20 grams of fiber per day. And that's just not enough food for the bacteria that's in there. And so I think the alternative workaround then is just focusing on colors. So I love that. I think that's critically important. And it seems to be critically important, especially when you're talking about Akkermansia, which is a keystone species that relies on these polyphenol compounds.
Do you find yourself struggling to get a good night's sleep? If so, you may be dealing with a hidden mineral deficiency. It is not at all uncommon in perimenopause and menopause to deal with sleep challenges. And we know that one of many contributory reasons for poor sleep can be a reduction in specific minerals that help regulate sleep quality, including magnesium, which is involved in GABA, which is our body's main calming neurotransmitter. We also know that we need potassium to create melatonin. And this is a hormone that is a master antioxidant, but is also utilized to help induce sleep. We also think about things like zinc, which can balance excitatory neurotransmitters like glutamate. And if it's overactive, meaning if your glutamate levels are too high, it can prevent your brain from becoming more relaxed and inducing sleep. And lastly, selenium increases both our deep sleep and sleep duration. All these minerals matter a lot for sleep, and any imbalances or deficits can have a major impact on the quality of sleep you get each night. And that's why I love Beam Minerals. They offer a full spectrum mineral supplement that gives you every essential mineral your body needs in the right doses, all in a highly absorbable liquid form. All you do is take a shot of Beam Minerals about an hour before bed. Don't worry, it tastes like water, and you'll replenish all of your body's minerals in about 30 seconds and give your brain what it needs for deep restorative sleep. I've been using this product over the last several months. I've really been impressed with the improvement in my sleep metrics, which I like to share on social media with my followers. And if you want a simple way to improve your sleep, head over to www.beamminerals.com and use code Cynthia for 20% off your first order. That's www.beamminerals.com and use code Cynthia for 20% off your first order. Consuming Element on a daily basis is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health. And we know that by consuming proper amounts of electrolytes, it can contribute to quality sleep, which is critical to all of my perimenopause and menopausal patients and clients. We know that magnesium increases a neurotransmitter called GABA that is known for producing calming effects. And consuming adequate levels of sodium can help you sleep through the night because low sodium levels increase cortisol and adrenaline. Additionally, if you are intermittent fasting, it's important to understand that when you fast, two things can dehydrate you. Number one, if your insulin levels remain low, it can signal to our kidneys to excrete more sodium or salt, a process called naturesis. And as glycogen or stored glucose is broken down, the water left over from the glycogen breakdown is urinated out. So if you want to take care of your health in one of my favorite ways, you can consume Element electrolytes. My favorite flavors are grapefruit and citrus, but there are many others to choose from. And if you go to drinkelement.com/Cynthia, you can get a free sample pack to try them out on your own. Again, it's drinkelement.com/Cynthia for your free sample pack where you can try all of their flavors. Yeah, and it's interesting to me because I think fiber in particular for a lot of people is very bio individual. And I'm the first person to say, you know, someone will reach out to me and say, well, how much fiber should I be eating? And I think supplements can play a role here, but I've come to find out that a quarter cup of a resistant starch in one person could barely be tolerated. And then I have other patients and clients that can take two scoops of a product and they have no problems whatsoever. So I really think that it speaks to the fact that whether it's the antibiotics we've received over the course of our lifetime, our chronic stress, you know, the nutrition, whether it's pristine or otherwise, I think so many things impact our ability to break down fiber in our gut. And I think it's very challenging to force someone to be taking copious amounts of fiber when it bloats them, it makes them miserable. And then they're feeling like they can't leave the house because they're either gaseous or they're constipated or whatever multiplicity of symptoms people experience. And so when we're looking at, you know, certainly the gut microbiome is important, but when we're looking at these hallmarks of aging, disabled autophagy, I think is important to speak on. And certainly my listeners are familiarized with intermittent fasting can be helpful for this, but there are other things that we can do in our lifestyle that can stimulate autophagy that I think are very important. And the longer I get into my intermittent fasting journey, the less fasting I do, and the more I do other things to evoke autophagy. So it doesn't just come from food restriction or caloric restriction.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, to take the conversation one step further. So what happens after a cell repairs itself, and what can you do to either prevent further senescence or to help move a cell out of senescence so that tissues and cells can regenerate. And, you know, again, that's the topic of senescence, which is intertwined with autophagy, but I love speaking about that as well. And we do know that intermittent fasting, water fasting, the fasting mimicking diet, they can really help to prime cells for elimination from the body. So I think that there's amazing things you can do that are senolytic in action. And that's kind of the next level science. Senolytic is essentially any substance that helps the body eliminate these senescent cells from the body. And there's plenty of lifestyle diet things that you can do. There's a lot of botanical things that you can do. And that really excites me because that's where the science is, I think.
It's so interesting. And, you know, kind of tying in what you were talking about, there are things we can do beyond just the fasting piece. What are some of the common symptoms you see when someone is struggling with senescence? Or what are some of the outward signs, maybe things that might be more apparent to a clinician, but are evidence that your senescence is not fully optimized?
Yeah, I mean, there's virtually no tissue that's untouched by senescence. You know, as we age, we start accruing these senescent cells and accumulating these senescent cells over time. It's thought that there is a point in time where the accumulation rate exceeds the elimination rate, and that's generally after the age of 40. And we see these senescent cells building up in every tissue. So the brain, as an example, you see it in the skin, you see it in the heart, you see it in the muscles. There's not any one place. And so it is individual per the individual. Not everybody accumulates them at the same rate nor in the same place. And so they can be experienced very differently across the board. You know, a lot of the science is in the area of joint health. And so when you get into preclinical animal studies, they're looking at the impact that senescent cells have on joints because it's easy to measure. In animals, we can actually look at before and after senescent cell load. That's much harder to do in humans. You know, unless you're doing muscle biopsies or bone biopsies and you're looking directly at senescent cell count, it's much easier to look at outcomes and function. And so you can look at, as an example, the skin, you can look at the immune cells, you can look at joints. And so, you know, there's no one thing that people can look for. You can just know that all tissues are affected over time by these senescent cells.
That's really interesting. And I would imagine if anyone's listening, you know, muscle biopsies, bone and biopsies are not pain-free. So I like the idea of, you know, observational, self-reported, or, you know, that are non-invasive that allow people to demonstrate that there's been a slowing of the aging process. What is the differentiator between senomorphics versus senolytics? Seems to be a burgeoning amount of information on both. When I was preparing for this, I was like, I think this is a really interesting distinction.
Yeah, so the whole category is known as senotherapeutics. And within that, there's two kind of buckets. First bucket is the senolytic, and then the second bucket is the senomorphic. A senolytic is any substance that helps eliminate a senescent cell from the body. And then a senomorphic is really any class of substance or nutrients that doesn't help get rid of the senescent cells per se, but it helps delete the negative effects of these inflammatory compounds that these cells release. I would say that there probably is more research in the area of senolytics presently, but I'm seeing more and more information emerge around senomorphics. Oftentimes you can do both to kind of double up and make sure that you're really supporting the body maximally. But I think doing one or the other is wise to do. I'm a big fan of senolytics just because the science is pretty strong showing that you can eliminate these senescent cells from the body.
And what would be some of the more common examples of senolytics? So if people are listening, I know some of these are, you know, plant extracts, some of them can be drug therapy. You know, what are the more popular senolytics?
I'll just start by saying, you know, this all started in 2015. You know, there was a group of scientists at the Mayo Clinic in Scripps that identified two compounds that were able to eliminate senescent cells. And so from that study, they termed this idea of a senolytic. And in this study, they used a pharmaceutical drug known as dasatinib, which is used for cancer. And then they used a compound that's known as quercetin, which is a widely used flavonoid, great benefit in the dietary supplement space for allergies, for inflammation. But it was that combination that showed benefits, showed that they were able to reduce senescent cell load, and they were able to bring about these very functional benefits. The study showed that by taking these two substances, animals were able to improve frailty, improve osteoporosis, improve their cardiac output, extend their health span, and extend their lifespan. So that's where the whole field started in 2015 on those two compounds. Since that time, they've tested a number of pharmaceutical drugs, which that's definitely not my area of expertise, given that I am a holistic physician and I work in the dietary supplement space. But there's been a lot of natural substances that they've discovered as well. And so shortly after quercetin was identified, they looked at a molecule known as piperlongamin, which is an extract from an Ayurvedic plant known as long pepper. Long pepper has been used for thousands of years in Ayurvedic medicine, really is the cousin to black pepper. It's a digestive stimulant, but historically it's been used as a rejuvenative for reproduction and the reproductive organs specifically. So it definitely has an affinity for the reproductive organs, and then it has this rejuvenating effect. And so it's cool because we're now identifying that in part it's working through that senolytic action. There's also a compound that was discovered in 2018 known as fisetin. We've known about fisetin for a long time, but this was our first time identifying how strong fisetin is. And fisetin is like quercetin. It's this yellow pigmented flavonoid that's widely available in foods. You can get it in apples and strawberries and grapes, but in very low amounts. And so in 2018, they tested this big panel of compounds looking at the senolytic action of all of the compounds. And they discovered that fisetin was the strongest of all of these agents. And so from this study, we have started using fisetin at a very specific dose, which is 20 milligrams per kilogram of body weight as a senolytic agent. And so I would say now, fisetin probably is the most buzzworthy of all senolytic compounds because of the research that opened up in 2018. When you get on clinicaltrials.gov, you can see dozens of studies on fisetin that are currently lined up, that are in process. And so we're going to learn more about fisetin here in the coming year or two, no doubt. But you know, you can get into a lot of different compounds too that are very well known. Curcumin is senolytic. Luteolin is senolytic. Soybean, especially some of the phytoestrogens, they're known to be senolytic. So there's a whole wide class of senolytic agents that are available. And the nice thing is we know how they work. They're very safe. We use them nutritionally for many different functions, one of which is offsetting the effects of free radicals. But these compounds work very specifically and they target senescent cells very selectively, which is part of the beauty of using them. So they don't harm healthy cells. They tend to go in and disable senescent cells in terms of the proteins that they upregulate to stay alive inside the body. So it's kind of amazing how they work, but knowing that, we can go in and find more senolytic compounds over time.
Oh, it's really interesting. And where does spermidine fit into the senolytic? Is it considered to be a senolytic despite its name? I know people sometimes are like, how do we actually know what this does? And I've, been down a rabbit hole learning about spermidine, but do you consider that to be one of the senolytics that you think are emerging, or do you feel like these other plant-based compounds are more efficacious?
Yeah, I would say that spermidine is probably mildly senolytic. It's definitely not one of the most powerful. It seems to be more beneficial for autophagy, and that's how I would use it. I would use it to promote autophagy more so than I would as a senolytic agent. So it really helps to prevent cells from getting into senescence in the first place. But there is some research showing that it is mildly senolytic.
Okay. And how often are we taking these senolytics? Because I would imagine that a combination therapy is more efficacious and easier than trying to take, five different compounds together a few times a month.
Yeah, so it gets really interesting when you look at how these things are used in a clinical setting. There is a concept known as intermittent dosing, which is known as hit and run. And so these substances are used in a hit and run fashion where you hit these cells hard and then you let the body recover. Typically, these substances are used over the course of 2, maybe 3 days, followed by several weeks, if not months, of recovery and rest. So we know that, it seems that, anyways, that intermittent dosing is much more effective than continuous dosing. So you don't need to use these things on a daily basis, which is great news. So anybody that wants to use a senolytic agent or to do a senolytic regimen, you just need to do it for 1 or 2 days and then let the body do what it does. So it's not a big ask, it's not a heavy lift. But we do know that it does take weeks, if not months, for senescent cells to reaccumulate. And we have early indicators showing that these senolytic agents tend to have lasting effects. We know that one round of quercetin and dasatinib can have lasting effects that maintain over the course of 7 months or more in mice. So this is something that you just need to do. You need to do intense dosing followed by a rest.
And so for someone that's listening, certainly the dasatinib obviously is a prescription, but these other compounds are, whether they put them together themselves or they're working off of a protocol, how does someone go about utilizing these, and how do we determine when someone is using them appropriately? I guess that's the way that I would suggest, because I recognize that plant-based compounds, plant extracts can be as efficacious, as powerful as pharmacotherapy. And so this is where I'm, providing some degree of caution just to say, to make sure that you're working with someone that's knowledgeable, because I would imagine some people may have a detox effect. There could be a significant detox effect if we're having this hit and run kind of mindset about intermittent dosing, taking a bunch for a short period of time and then backing off and, kind of, as you said, intermittently dosing this senolytic product.
Yeah, so there are several senolytic products that are available. Dietary supplements, they're natural, they're easily available online. I will say the great majority of them are either dosed in the wrong way, they're a continuous everyday dosing, or they're not using the right doses for these ingredients. So we know that quercetin, as an example, needs to be at that 20 milligram per kilogram of body weight dose. And that equates to about a 1400 milligram dose. So that would be, 14 milligrams in 1 day. Doing that 2 or 3 days would give you that senolytic effect. So if you do a 30 milligram dose of quercetin over the course of weeks, that doesn't appear to have that senolytic effect. So senescent cells tend to be heterogeneous. So they're not all the same. They have different upregulation of proteins. And so there's not any one thing that you can do to target all of the senescent cells in the body. And so it is important that you're doing multiple ingredients so that you're targeting these scap networks, multiple scap networks throughout the body, and you're undercutting the optimal maximal number of senescent cells that you can. We also know that senolytics are not equally active in all tissues. So there's no one senolytic compound that can target all senescent cells in the body. And so again, it's important to have multiple ingredients that target different tissues in the body. And so, we've already identified that certain forms of curcumin from turmeric can impact brain tissue and has that senolytic effect specifically in the brain tissue. We know that quercetin has an affinity for adipose. We know that quercetin has an affinity for bone marrow and the spine specifically. And so we're starting to figure out exactly where these substances work and how to combine them. So my general rule of thumb is just make sure that you're maximizing the dose, that you're using a broad number of compounds, many different colors, and then to use them in that intermittent dosing. So use them for 1 or 2 days, followed by that rest period.
That's so interesting, and especially about the senolytics that are specific to different tissues or body parts. Now, a lot of questions came in around brain aging. And, you know, men will go through andropause, women will eventually, if they live long enough, go through menopause, but a lot of concerns about how to support a healthy brain as they're getting older. What are the things we can be doing? You know, you mentioned 40 is when, you know, we start seeing more accelerated aging. I would imagine lifestyle is quite significant. And obviously, curcumin and brain health seem to be, you know, aligned. What are some of the things you focus in on with your patients to help support cognition, neurocognitive status as they are getting older?
It really all starts with diet, first and foremost. I mean, you build your mind based upon what you eat. And we know that that's a very strong direct link. So you got to make sure that you're getting the right macronutrient combination. The brain is made of fat. And so one of the things that I overemphasize are fats, especially over protein. I think the average American diet, people are focusing way too intensely on protein. And I'm trying to shift that towards the area of fat, focusing on healthy fats, especially the omega-3 variety. That seems to be critically important. And then, you know, when you're getting into senolytics, again, we know that neurons never turn over. Neurons in the brain never actually go into senescence, but the cells that support and surround neurons do. And so it's important that you're helping them turn over, move through apoptosis, and being eliminated from the body. And so doing certain senolytic compounds, especially, you know, in the form of turmeric, as an example, can be beneficial just to kind of clear the cobwebs and to optimize cellular communication in the brain specifically. So that seems to be critically important. Obviously, diet, lifestyle, getting enough sleep. There's things that I would recommend doing on a daily basis too, to improve cognitive performance. You know, I'm a huge fan of adaptogenic botanicals, not only for buffering the effects of stress, but just in terms of their benefit for cognitive performance. So I'd highly recommend finding the adaptogen that is suitable to your body type and then using that every single day just to really shift your balance of hormones and to make sure that you're just optimizing mentation the best that you can.
Do you have specific adaptogens that you like or lean into, like ashwagandha, rhodiola, et cetera?
Yeah. So there's no perfect adaptogen for all people. Adaptogens by definition are non-toxic and suitable for everybody. But when you get into the energetics of the plants, it gives you a different lens to look through. So my background is in Ayurvedic medicine, and Ayurveda looks at the energetic properties and qualities of everything, especially food, especially botanicals. And so, you know, you need to make sure that you're marrying up the right herb with your body type, and you need to create balance by doing opposites. And so that's a fundamental tenet of Ayurveda. So just very broadly, abstractly speaking, if you have too much heat, you want to do the opposite of that. You want to do something on a daily basis that's cooling. And so you had mentioned ashwagandha as an example. Ashwagandha is perhaps the trendiest botanical right now, and rightfully so. I love ashwagandha, but ashwagandha has an energetic imprint that everybody just should be mindful of. It tends to be very warm in nature, and it's calming in nature. So if you are the opposite of that, if you are too cold and you tend to be too riled up and your mind's always going, ashwagandha is perfect for you. And so do that botanical every single day. Rhodiola, another fantastic herb. It tends to be, I think, the most felt of all the adaptogens because it is somewhat stimulating. But rhodiola is cooling, it's stimulating, and it's very drying. So if you have problems with being too dry, whether your skin's too dry, your eyes are too dry, your mouth is too dry, rhodiola may not be for you because it does have a very drying quality. You know, you get into certain other categories. Ginseng has some other energetics that can complement the other two that I've talked about. Ginseng tends to be stimulating, very heating. So that can be good for in certain cases. I find that American ginseng is better than some of the Panax Korean ginsengs because it tends to be a little less hot and a little bit more balancing. And so there's a whole, you know, there's probably 20 different adaptogens that you can choose from. So my recommendation is just to, you know, play with a few, see how you feel on them. You can even work with certain combinations. You know, I use a combination of ashwagandha and rhodiola that really just is well balanced and complement each other very well. I use that on a daily basis, if not a weekly basis.
Have you guys heard about a bioactive whole food on the market with 5,000 published research studies backing it? When my oldest son needed to go on antibiotics a few months ago, I discovered Armour colostrum, and the benefits for him and his recovery from being on antibiotics have been instrumental in me now recommending this to my dairy non-sensitive patients and clients. Armour's colostrum strengthens immunity, ignites metabolism, fortifies gut health, promotes hair growth and skin radiance, and powers fitness, performance, and recovery. My son has mentioned to me over and over again how great his gut feels, how he has improved his digestion and gut function as well. Colostrum is a rich, exclusive source of immunoglobulins or antibodies that optimize our immune defense even during cold and flu season. And we know the mucosal barriers house over 80% of our body's immune cells, including the antibodies IgG and SIgA. And these immunoglobulins bind and intercept harmful particles like viruses, bacteria, and toxins, blocking them from crossing into the barriers into our bloodstream. And Armour's colostrum contains the highest levels of SIgA and IgG to ensure your most fortified first line of protection. It's sustainably sourced, and it's important to know that you want to mix colostrum only with cold liquids or foods, or dry scoop it into your mouth. This is also great for the oral microbiome. And we've worked out a special offer for my everyday wellness community where you can receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/Cynthia15 or enter Cynthia15 to get 15% off your first order. That's tryarmra.com/Cynthia15. You definitely want to check it out. Today's podcast is sponsored by NutriSense. It combines cutting-edge technology and human expertise so you can see how your body responds to different types of nutrition, stress, exercise, sleep, and where you are in your menstrual cycle in real time. And by pairing a continuous glucose monitor with their app and expert nutritional guidance, NutriSense can help you reach your health goals. And the best part is it's not just a program where they send you the CGM and you have to figure it out on your own. Each subscription plan includes 1 month of free expert nutritionist support. Your nutritionist will work with you one-on-one, interpreting your data and providing customized advice to help you reach your health goals. The last time I had my CGM on, my registered dietitian and I troubleshooted over some specific concerns that I had. And whether you're aiming to lose weight, stabilize your energy, or just feel better overall, NutriSense offers the guidance and support you need. And lasting sustainable change takes time and can be achieved through a longer-term subscription. That's why I encourage my patients and clients to consider 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions where it's actually less expensive and allows you to not only achieve your goals, but also to ensure that you stick to your healthy lifestyle for the long term. As I've mentioned before, I have found the CGMs I've used through NutriSense to be incredibly insightful, specifically to carbohydrate tolerance. I would not have known that plantains spiked my blood sugar without this information. It's also been hugely helpful for tailoring to workouts and sleep quality. And so for me, even though I am metabolically healthy, I find the insights to be particularly helpful to tailor my lifestyle changes to my blood sugar. Visit NutriSense.io/EWP and use the code EWP for $30 off plus 1 month of free nutritionist support. Be sure to let them know you're a listener of the Everyday Wellness podcast when they ask you how you heard about them. This is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health and one of my top recommendations for all of my patients and clients. That's really helpful. And I don't think we've actually explored Ayurvedic medicine on the podcast before. And so pardon my oversimplification, but there are three main types. I think it's Pitta, Vata, and I'm forgetting the third one, but we will fall into one of those categories, correct? And through that lens, we then are able to determine how we eat and how we, you know, de-stress and how we focus our life. And so perhaps we can just have a brief discussion so that for people that are not familiarized with what Ayurvedic medicine is, to have a sense of where you're coming from. And I love that you appropriately mentioned that adaptogens are as bio-individual as we all are.
Yeah, Ayurveda, that is a very deep rabbit hole. Ayurveda is, in short, the traditional healing system of India. It's considered the first form of medicine in the world. It originated some 5,000 years ago and still very much alive and flourishing today. It's considered the sister science of yoga. And so a lot of what we're learning from yoga practice, it just overlaps nicely into Ayurvedic medicine. Obviously, the botanicals from Ayurveda that are trending right now would include turmeric, ashwagandha. All of those come from this 5,000-year-old medical system. Ayurveda is a combination of two Sanskrit words, Ayu, that means life, and Veda, that means science. And so it can be translated as the science of life or the science of living. But so it really encompasses much more than just medical diagnosis and treatment. It teaches you how to live in harmony with the universe and understanding yourself. And it all starts with body typing. And so there are three main body types, which you mentioned, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. And those, without getting too technical, those are different combinations of the five elements. And depending on the makeup of those five elements in your body, it gives you a body type. As an example, my body type is Vata, which is the space and air elements. So innately, I'm lacking the other three elements. I'm lacking water, fire, and earth. And so because Ayurveda is all about balance and using opposites to create balance, that's what I focus on because my body type has those two elements, the air and the space. Everything that I do is about putting more of those lacking elements into my body. So my diet is all consists of almost predominantly fire, earth, and water elements. My botanicals also have those same elements. And so those are what I need to be balanced. So everybody, it's important to try to identify your body type, understand the energetic properties of that body type, and then you know the specific diet that you should be eating, you know the dietary supplement regimen that you should be using. You really know everything that you need in order to create balance and live a long, happy life.
Yeah, thank you for that. I just wanted to make sure if there were listeners that were less familiarized with that terminology, that they had some context to the conversation. Now, I'd love to pivot a little bit and talk about, you know, north of 40, sarcopenia, this anabolic resistance. How in your approach to your patient care do you, because you mentioned you think that there's too much focus on protein. You think for brain health, we really need to focus on omega-3s and healthy fats. How do you make peace with the process of anabolic resistance that gets worse with aging that, you know, I think is seemingly at the basis for a lot of metabolic poor health here in the United States?
Yeah. I mean, the muscle is a highly metabolic tissue. It's important that you're giving it the nutrients it needs to repair itself. But, you know, you need to make sure that you're moving your muscles, that you're needing those nutrients in the first place. So it starts with staying active, followed by the proper nutrients post-exercise. I'm a huge fan of leucine, which is usually found in a branched chain amino acids. There's some really good studies showing that that can help get muscles to the active size that you need and to make sure that they maintain that size as we age. And again, getting back into this idea of senescent cells, we know that senescent cells build up in the body, specifically in the muscles as we age. And so if you have senescent cells in aging tissue, it can't regenerate properly. And so you're not going to see the same kind of growth that you would when you're younger. And so it's important that you're targeting those senescent cells that are found in muscles so that you can regenerate and repair properly. And so there are certain nutrients that do that. There are certain ingredients we know that do that, one of which is an ingredient called Synactive. And Synactive is a really fascinating ingredient. It's very novel in the supplement industry right now. It's just a combination of two different adaptogenic herbs, notoginseng and sweet chestnut. And this combination, if you take it, it actually will help eliminate senescent cells in muscles. And they've done studies in humans using muscle biopsy before and after exercise to show that this substance at a very small dose has that effect. So I love that idea. I don't think that there's any one thing that people should be doing. I think there's a lot of little things that people should be doing to make sure they maintain their muscle as they age.
Yeah, I think so many people still, maybe not listeners to my podcast, but so many people still think of muscle as something that's more, you know, phenotypic. It's just the way that, you know, your body looks with clothing on, but there's so much more to it. And certainly an area of focus of my work and the SenoActive product that you just talked about, I've never heard of before. So I'm going to have to go learn more about that. Now, to circle back to the Senolytics, because I know there'll be a lot of questions about this. Is there a product that you're currently working with that you like that provides the diffuse distribution of plant extracts in a way that it's, you know, maybe encompassed in one product that people can utilize, as opposed to sourcing, you know, this much curcumin and this much quercetin and this much quercetin to be able to utilize that intermittent dosing pattern that you referred to?
Yeah, I mean, so I have created a product with a company called Neurohacker Collective. We have a product that we created well over 12 months now, and it's quickly become the number one selling product in that line. It's called Qualia Senolytic, and it's just a beautiful product. I mean, it really is leveraging all of the science that's available currently and putting it into one product. It's a simple blend of 9 botanical extracts, giving that dose of 1400 milligrams of quercetin, giving a super absorbable form of quercetin, which is a phytosome form, and then a lot of other botanicals in there that are selective in terms of how they work in the body. So that product is, it uses the intermittent dosing schedule that we spoke about. So it's 6 capsules on day 1, 6 capsules on day 2, followed by several week break. And we recommend that people over the age of 40 start using this product. You can start using it monthly. You can even use it seasonally, you know, perhaps one time per year. You can use it as much as you really need to, given your health status, your health needs, your age. So I'm very fond of that product. It really is unique in the marketplace, and I haven't seen anything else like it. So that would be my one recommendation.
Yeah, it's so interesting and definitely something I'm going to look into because, again, as I was preparing for our discussion today and realizing that although I exercise, I sleep well, I do intermittent fasting, there are probably more things I could be doing to add to my regimen. Dr. Nick, please let my listeners know how to connect with you, how to get access to Qualia if they're interested in learning more about your product.
Yeah. So we are available. Neurohacker Collective is available on all the social platforms. You can find out more about the brand and about products at neurohacker.com. It's a fantastic website, just a lot of information, blogs, articles, ingredient monographs. You know, we have formulators, articles about all of our products, about why we formulated them in the way that we formulated them with all of the science. And so we are an education first company, which I'm really proud of. You can find out about that online. We also have a podcast called Collective Insights, where we talk about all things related to health and wellness, including nootropics and senolytics and more.
Awesome. Thank you again for your time today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
If you love this podcast episode, please leave a rating and review, subscribe, and tell a friend.
Just as you carefully choose the cut of meat or freshness of produce that you cook at home, you should carefully choose chemical-free cookware that provides a healthy and safe cooking experience. The materials in 360 cookware are safe, sustainable, and of the highest quality. Their cookware is 100% free from any toxic chemicals as the company produces quality stainless steel cookware and bakeware without added chemicals, and all are manufactured in the United States. It's also the leading manufacturer that equips kitchens with cookware and bakeware that are free of all of the toxic chemicals and coatings, including PFAS, Teflon, and ceramic. And the best thing is that when used properly, the product's construction provides nonstick properties in a product that can be passed down through generations. Go to www.360cookware.com and use code Cynthia20 for 20% off your first order. Again, that's 360cookware.com and use code Cynthia20 for 20% off your first order. We've been using their products over the last several months and have really been pleased with not only the durability, but ease of cleanliness.